Hello, everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, your weekly guide to the weird and wild world of comics, manga, and all their spin-offs. I'm Andrew, and as per usual, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Rob and Mick.
Hello.
Hello.
Once again, I realise that there's two of you, and new listeners have no way of differentiating which one is which.
You keep doing this, don't you?
I do, constantly. Sadly, this is not the alternate timeline where I don't mess up the introduction.
I think it's easy to spot which of us is which. I was the one who said hello.
I was also the one that said hello.
Oh, bugger.
It's happening again.
If maybe one of you wanted to say what your name was.
I don't know, should I? Because I've
But then the feds might catch me.
This is true.
The one who's being chased by the feds is Mick, the other one's Rob.
Yes.
Oh. Anyway. This is a comics and manga podcast, at least when we remember it is. And this week, we are going to be talking about a very comic booky topic indeed.
Yes.
Alternate timelines. So, I was going to say comics in which the events are different from normal time, but also that's all comics. Guys, do you know that comic books aren't actually real?
What? Yes.
All these superheroes, I mean. Because comic books exist.
No, because I've been watching them documentaries. There's that one about Supergirl.
There was the one about the guy called Flash, but he wasn't really fast, he just wore a big overcoat.
I think you're watching documentaries in the wrong place. But there is one about a guy called the Flash, and it's about his constant craving to be the fastest man alive, but never actually being the fastest man alive, just being one of them.
Yeah, but for someone who talks a big talk about being the fastest man alive, he sure is slower than a lot of people.
Indeed. And then there's that other one about the guy who, in deference to fans like me who are colourblind, doesn't even mention what colour his arrow is.
Yeah.
I mean, just to be honest, for a long time, he was the black leather arrow, which, oh no. Oh, that's not a good code name.
No.
You sometimes just have that moment when you're talking and you realise, I'm saying a bad thing. If only we could rewrite the rules of reality so that we existed in a timeline where I never said that. Much like...
Hey, if you give Marvel 10 minutes,
no,
they will.
Shush, I'm doing the segue, Mick. We're doing an actual proper show now.
When? In what alternative timeline does that happen?
In the alternative timeline where I've edited all of this out. So, Marvel Comics, they're doing an X-Men event at the moment called Age of X-Men.
Yeah.
You know X-Man, who isn't actually part of the X-Men.
Yeah,
but it's basically sort of like the X-Man Cable, but from an alternate reality.
See, I was confused by that. Why was he called X-Man? I didn't know much about the event.
If we try and get into the specifics of who and what Nate Gray is, that's a show in and of itself. But basically, he decided the X-Men were just too dang horny and rewrote reality so that they're not anymore.
And what?
That's the plot of an actual comic book in the year 2019. Is that the X-Man made a reality where relationships don't exist anymore.
Am I dreaming right now? Is this a weird fevered cheese dream that I'm having? Am I dreaming
we're recording
the show?
No, Rob, you're not dreaming. You don't have to pinch yourself. You really are on 4Panel.
And Andrew literally said those words that a comic
all
book...
All the X-Men are incels now.
Oh, my God.
Do you know what the weirdest part is?
What?
It's actually really good. It's like this weird kind of The Prisoner-esque, like, psychological, semi-philosophical drama thing.
The one that everyone hails as one of the best alternate timeline events, or two of the best X-Men ones anyway, were Days of Future Past and Age of Apocalypse, weren't they?
See, Days of Future Past, I feel, kind of doesn't count for what we're doing here.
Well, the question I was going to ask was, how does this current one compare to those?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Age of Apocalypse is definitely a good point, because I feel like the whole point of this is it's very specifically like the complete opposite of Age of Apocalypse.
All right.
Where the world itself is like this big shining utopia, but there's just this sense that something's kind of fundamentally wrong with the world.
So it's more like House of M then?
Yeah, I think House of M is a good comparison, only less Bendis-y.
Yeah. Marvel have always done some interesting stuff with their alternate timeline stuff. There was the What If stuff that they used to do.
I don't mind things like the What If stuff, where it's just like, you know, the early What Ifs anyway, where it was just a like one or two shot idea, you know. What if, random idea, what if Peter Parker had got radioactive and bitten the spider? Those kind of quirky sort of, it's just a one-off. There's no big arc here. We're not going to split a universe in half. They're all right. I like them. They're quite interesting.
Did either of you read the new run of What Ifs they did last year?
I read that What If one where they had like a bunch of stuff that was connected to the Avengers and Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff like that.
Ah, no, see, this was like properly just like the good old school, just a series of completely independent one-shots.
No, I didn't catch that one.
Oh, man, you should. They were really good. There was one where it was like what if Flash Thompson was Spider-Man?
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Turns out he's a big jerk at it. Then there's What If Spider-Man Was the Punisher?
Ooh.
Which goes better than you would think.
Okay.
What if, really random one, what if Magic from the X-Men, who's like Colossus's little sister, basically what if, I can't remember what the specific title was, but it's basically what if she just decided to go off with Doctor Strange and become like the next Sorcerer Supreme, which was just a super fun story. And my personal favourite, what if Thor got adopted by the Frost Giants?
Oh, wow. That one is interesting.
Basically, it just swaps over like Thor and Loki's roles.
Yeah.
That was really good. But yeah, I like stuff like that.
That was kind of like, remember DC used to do the Elseworlds stuff?
Yeah. That was like, I miss Elseworlds. They did some good stuff.
They had some really interesting ones. Gotham by Gaslight was an Elseworlds one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, like, it was one of two Mike Mignola ones, which, spoiler alert for anyone who's listened to this show before, I really like the Mike Mignola ones.
Yes. I've got.
It was that, and Batman, the doom that came to Gotham.
Yeah. There was an Elseworlds steampunk one. I have some of the Elseworlds Batman ones and some of the Elseworlds Superman ones. I have, like, the Blue, the Grey, and the Bat, which is not very good at all. But then I also have Batman Master of the Future, which was more of a steampunkish Batman thing.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a sequel to Gotham by Gaslight, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a sequel to Gotham by Gaslight. I mean, just within Batman itself, there's also a bunch of other, they're not quite Elseworlds, but they're crossovers with other comic book companies, like Judgment on Gotham.
Yeah.
Which I think is the big one that everyone remembers.
And the thing is, that was popular enough to spawn sequels.
Yeah, the sequels weren't great, but...
No, and I'm not saying that it was a good precedent to set.
Yeah, but the artwork in Judgment on Gotham was amazing.
It was.
It's also kind of weird to think that, like, that there's now, like, two whole lots of just entire DC Comics continuity, which is an alternate timeline.
Well, never mind that. I mean, the whole point of Armageddon 2001 was just, let's do a bunch of Elseworlds stuff and put it all together.
Yeah.
Which is why you had Wave Rider going around the time stream, touching all the heroes.
Yeah, in a special way.
Can you not mention that? Because there are legal proceedings going on around that.
No, but see, the thing is, Mick, he's got the touch. He's got the power.
Yeah. He could see their future in some of them. I think he touched Superman like three times. And in, I can't remember what happened in the first one, but in one of them, Lois Lane dies because the baby that she's carrying between her and Clark is some kind of superpowered baby. And
that's where I read that plot line.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she dies because the baby kicked a bit too hard. So Clark leaves Earth and then ends up marrying Maxima. And there was another one where his dad, Jonathan Kent, dies in a horrible tractor accident.
Yeah, and as we all know, he says, no, Clark, whatever you do, don't save me from this certain death.
Yeah.
That's how you become a real superhero.
Yeah, he dies in a horrible tractor accident when the experienced farmer that he is decides he's going to fix his tractor while his tractor is parked on a slant, and the tractor falls on him. And then he becomes president of the USA.
See, I know you mean Superman, but I kind of want to imagine a time when Jonathan can get run over by his own tractor, and that's enough to win him a presidential candidacy. Which, I mean, given the state of America in, again, the year of our Lord 2019.
Yep.
Is that really too far-fetched?
No. No, it's not.
But yeah, I think what's cool about that kind of alternate timeline is it's basically taking an opportunity to say, here's the stories that we can't really ever tell in regular continuity. Like, what if the Flash had a child who then didn't just get erased from existence? DC, you... but just basically, like, giving superheroes, like, endings or character progressions that we're probably not going to get to see in the main comics.
Yeah.
I mean, that was probably the best thing in Ultimate Comics was just the idea of going, look, here's Peter Parker, he's Spider-Man. Now he's dead and this, like, random new dude is Spider-Man.
Yep. When you get right down to it, alternate continuities, they're not exactly the same as alternate realities in comics, are they?
Yeah, I think there's definitely plenty of kind of alternate realities where it's just, I don't know, what if X was Y? And usually that's kind of just to tell a story about, like, our main version of the hero meeting them.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at the current Marvel comic book universe, then you've got a bunch of alternate universes, but they're all kind of within one multiverse. But the whole point of an alternate continuity is that it's something completely split off from that particular multiverse sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It's basically an alternate continuity is one where it doesn't have to be intertwined with anything that's come before it.
Yeah, which would explain 1602.
Oh yeah, what if Marvel but Elizabethan?
Basically.
Now you see, they're the ones that I really don't see the point of. Those kind of, just, you know, that never really sort of gathered my interest, 1602. I saw it, I read the background, I thought, am I really that interested in what would happen if Marvel superheroes were Elizabethan? No. No, I'm not.
Well, but are you not intrigued by the idea of Spider-Man having a rough?
No, really not.
Well, I just think there's no hope for you.
If I wanted that, I'd rush out and buy an edition of Spider-Man that was set at a Renaissance fair.
Do you know my issue with 1602? My real issue with 1602 was that all of the heroes were basically just, they were kind of the same as they are now, with their high-handed morals and everything like that, and we must never kill, blah, blah, blah. But if you go back to the 16th century, they didn't have that attitude at all.
I think, Rob, what you mean is the 17th century.
Sorry, 17th century, 1602, we're 2 years in, sorry. I apologise for the inaccuracy.
It's all right. In another continuity, that's how we count centuries, so you're fine, you're fine.
We actually count the centuries.
I smoked too hard and now my face hurts.
We actually count the centuries by using the number at the beginning of the year.
But only in an alternate timeline.
Hey, we're in the 19th century. No, we're in the 20th century. Then why is it 1985?
Because this is English, goddammit. Nothing's allowed to make sense. But I think we need to start sticking a lot of superfluous letters on the front of century as well.
Oh, please.
Give it a K and an H and a silent N at the end.
Are we going to have some weird mashup between Arabic and Roman numerals?
We've already got that. It's called alphanumeric keyboard.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the alternate continuity where this is a ranting about English podcast.
Yes.
Anyway, back to alternate continuities. I think one of the biggest cleanouts that I've seen of the different alternate continuities that sprouted up was that Crisis on Infinite Earths. You know, the one written by Marv Wolfman.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what made DC continuity alternate continuity.
Yeah, because up until then, it was very, very messed up.
Oh, yeah. It also involved characters being around in, like, the 1950s.
Yep. Do you think Marvel needs something like that?
I don't know. I don't know whether... As you know, I'm on a bit of a downer with Marvel at the minute.
Yeah.
And I've just got a feeling that if Marvel tried something like that, they just wouldn't get it right, unless they did it as a movie.
I feel like it would be the new 52, wouldn't it?
Oh. Yeah.
Where no one's actually quite sure what does and doesn't count anymore.
God. And also, how would we know that within about 12 months they wouldn't do it again?
You mean like they did with the new 52?
Yeah.
To be fair, the new 52 got like a good few years out of it.
Yeah, it did. But then again, Marvel got a good few years out of the Ultimate stuff as well, didn't they?
Oops.
Hello?
We've accidentally come to Heroes Reborn.
Oh God. I forgot about that.
Which means we've also come to Onslaught.
Don't remind me.
That was the worst what if. What if Rob Liefeld just was in charge of the entire Marvel universe?
Yeah. It wasn't good.
That's the continuity that gave us possibly one of the most famous Captain America drawings. How do you even describe the anatomy in that picture, Rob?
Bulbous?
There's a bulbous salutation.
I was about to say, which one you mean, and then I remembered which one you meant.
Yeah, you know the one.
I do know the one, that's why I said bulbous.
The one where the muscles are in no way correspondent to an actual human being's physical structure.
Yep. Yeah, there's that. And also, he did the Captain America side-on view as well, didn't he? The one where Captain America, his pecs are basically like F-cups.
I think this guy's got issues.
You think?
Someone said he's got far too many issues. He yeah. should have been taken off some of them too.
Oh, dear.
Okay, I think we have to cancel the podcast now. I don't think we're going to make a better joke than that.
Ever.
But just for you, Mick.
Yeah.
There you go. Have a look. Marvel at Captain America's pecs.
The strange thing is, of course, Andrew, there's a really weird alternative universe where Rob cracked that one. Oh my!
No.
Oh my good lord! I mean, that doesn't even work with perspective. I mean, his shoulders are facing to the right, and his chest is at 45 degrees to them. I mean, that's not normal. And that's the least not normal thing about this. No wonder he looks a bit severe.
I'm pretty sure it's just Captain America, but with another Captain America strapped to the front of him.
I mean...
Do you know what it looks like he's done? Because someone's noticed this. It looks like a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger when he used to be bodybuilding and competing. And they put that picture next to the picture of Captain America by Rob Liefeld. They said, these two, you know...
Also, actually, if you look, right, at the left-hand side of his shield, the back of his legs don't continue behind it.
They don't. Just so many times I've never noticed that before.
So he's basically got a built-in chair-shaped backside. He can just... if you can find him an appropriate height shelf, he's sorted. This is the Captain America that bus shelter seats were designed for. That's the only person who can sit on those.
I think he has a special wagon that just attaches to the back of him.
Oh, wow.
Jeez, I don't think I've ever seen that degree of top heaviness outside of a Transformers figure.
No.
Oh, hell.
I mean, I think we're just going to have to stop there, because we're not going to top that, are we?
No. or the most bulbous.
Actually, I think this is the timeline where the need for superheroes is eroding because everybody's really happy with life. There is no crime for them to fight anymore because everybody's really happy because they can sit with ease on a bus shelter seat because we've all got butts that shape. That's the timeline this is from.
And turns out that was the secret to crime all along.
That's the secret to eternal happiness. Someone's found a use for those seats in bus shelters.
So we were all just angry about our inconveniently shaped butts all along.
That's right. It's all evolution's fault.
Oh my, I've got it. I've got the next DC versus Marvel crossover.
Oh.
Nightwing versus the weird butt dimension.
Oh, imagine the collector's figurine that will come out for that.
Oh, only Nightwing's perfection can combat this chaos. That'll be the tagline on the first issue, won't it?
Yeah.
But it's great because we flipped the whole genre on its head. Because suddenly Dick Grayson is in a world where he has the worst butt.
Oh, and Arrow's been cancelled.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing I was going to mention earlier before I got distracted by all the leather.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I guess it was going to have to happen one day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it makes sense for the sort of granddaddy of that verse to be the first to go, unless there's other news that's yet to be announced.
Possibly. You never know. But Arrow had lost a lot of audience recently.
Well, I think that the problem with it is, when it came out, it was quite nice in terms of being like something a bit different. We'd not really had that kind of dark superhero series,
yeah,
before.
Yeah, because I mean, like the main superhero TV series before that was Smallville, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and that, you know, it had its dark moments, but it was essentially a light teen drama, wasn't it? Whereas this has got. But I think the problem for Arrow is it's just been inexorably... It's like the EastEnders of the superhero universe. It's inexorably miserable. Nothing nice ever happens to them.
Yeah, my main problem with Arrow was that after the first two seasons, it lost its teeth. In the first season, and I think for a part of the second season, he was actually killing people. And then all of a sudden, he stopped killing people. Nobody caused a fuss about that. Like, all of a sudden...
No, I think if he stopped killing people, then decided, nah, actually, I'm going to kill some people. But then he said he wasn't going to kill people until he thought, actually, what if I just kill some people? And then he decided he wasn't going to kill people.
And then it all depended on how what he was doing at this time mirrored something that either had happened to him in the past, happened to him at the same time, or, and this is this season, happened in the future to his children.
You know, I've just realised.
What?
Oliver Queen is that one guy who just never shuts up about the one holiday he went on a few years ago.
It was
like,
a lovely...
Oh my God, Oliver, we get it. This terrorist attack is just like this one time you were stuck on the island.
Yeah.
God.
It was a lovely island, though.
Here's the web address for Kayak. Now book yourself a nice holiday.
That's the thing, actually. Speaking of alternate continuities, if you look at the DCEU and the MCU, and even DC's TV stuff, they're all completely separate from the comic books, aren't they?
Yeah. Separate but linked, aren't they? They all tend to be derived from an arc plot, don't they?
Yeah.
Actually, do you think that's maybe why we don't have stuff like, say, the Ultimate Universe anymore? Because basically, that's what the MCU has become.
Yeah.
Sort of condensing down all the comic continuity and sort of repackaging it for a new audience.
Basically, yeah. Although, I'm kind of glad that Ultimate Hulk isn't in there.
Yeah, Ultimate Hulk. You and your obsession with not being a sissy boy.
Yeah.
Mark Millar's bad at comics, actually.
Yeah, that and the eating people.
And not even in the fun way.
Yep.
Anyway, I think now's probably a good time to have a break, do you think?
Yes, yes,
I think so, yeah.
Great, we'll be back in a bit with what we've been reading.
Hello, do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Hi, and welcome back to the second part of this week's episode, in which we will tell you about some comics, what we have looked at and read with our eyes in there.
Yes, and this week with my eyes, which I need glasses for, but still work, I've been reading something that actually fits in with what we've just been talking about, kind of. Spider-Geddon, which is Armageddon involving spiders, I suppose.
Spider-Man. It's also literally Spider-Man 2, Too Many Spider-Men.
It is. It literally is.
Which always cracks me up.
It quite literally is Spider-Man 2, Too Many Spider-Men.
Is it Spider-Men or is it Spider-Mans?
It's Spider-People because there are women in there as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
And there's a lot, right? There are a lot of Spider-Men in this and Spider-Women and Spider-People. And there's a lot of spiders. Let's just call them that, right? So this collects Spider-Geddon 0 and 1 to 5, Vault of Spiders 1 and 2. And it's written by Christos Gage, Dan Slott, Jed McKay, Cullen Bunn, Neela Magruder, James Asmus, Ryan North, Jeffrey Thorne, and it's illustrated by George Molina, Clayton Crane, Javier Garon, Carlo Barberi, Todd Nauk, Stefano Caselli, Joey Vasquez, Scott Koblish, Javier Pulido, Sheldon Vela, Alberto Albuquerque, Juan Gedeon, Mark Bagley, David A. Williams, and Todd Harris. Don't ask me who did what, though, because that is just... No, I've already got enough Spider-Men to deal with. I don't need to go through that as well. So anyway, I said Spider-Geddon 0 and Spider-Geddon 1 to 5. But it's further broken down into different chapters as well. So you start off with Spider-Geddon 0, where you basically have the superior Spider-Man going to the world of a new Spider-Man, who I believe is the PlayStation 4 Spider-Man.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's probably the weirdest thing about Spider-Geddon is it's now a canonical part of Spider-Man PS4.
Yeah.
So if that game gets a sequel, do you think there's going to be a bit where, like, you're swinging around the city? It's better to... Boy, this sure is weird, but not as weird as that time that I got dragged into an alternate universe with a bunch of other Spider-Men and had to fight some energy vampires.
Possibly. You never know. So
does this mean that now this entire Spider-Man continuity is not available to Xbox owners?
No. It doesn't mean that.
Sorry, Mick, you can't read Spider-Man comics anymore.
Yay!
Anyway, Spider-Geddon starts off with Superior Spider-Man going to pick up the PlayStation 4 Spider-Man, because that's how I'm going to refer to him from now on. That one is the first issue, the zero issue of Spider-Geddon, called New Players. Then you move on to something called Check-In, then Spider-Geddon 1 to 5, Vault of Spiders 1 Prologue, The Web-Slinger, Final Galaxy Battle, Spider-Bite, Savage Spider-Man, Vault of Spiders 2 Prologue, Spider-Man, The Spectacular Spider-Mom, and The Spider Shock the Spider.
You've said some words there.
Yes. So in the prologue issue of Spider-Geddon, Otto Octavius has gone to meet the PS4 Peter Parker, who is fighting the tarantula and is asking questions about whether the tarantula violates copyright since he has the name Spider-Man. And he gets pulled into the War of the Spiders because Otto, being the smart person that he is, if you remember from Countdown to Spider-Geddon that I covered a while ago, Otto decided to use the cloning technology of the Inheritors. And when they thought they'd beaten the Inheritors, Otto thought, I'm a smart boy. I'm going to live forever as a clone, just like the Emperor in Star Wars.
Dr. Octopus is kind of a dum-dum, isn't he?
Yes. Otto Octavius is kind of a dum-dum. So anyway, in Loomworld, you've got Hobie and the other Spider-Men keeping an eye on the Inheritors who've been trapped on a particular world. And what they don't realise is that the Inheritors are collecting these drones that they're sending in order to make some sort of technology. Now, the Inheritors are a nasty bunch, a very nasty bunch. And, well, because Otto's using that cloning technology, they can send a signal out and transmit their consciousness into a clone body. And so it's up to the spiders to try and stop Otto's cloning technology, and that involves Spider UK, Spider Ham, Spider Punk, Spider Man Noir, Spider Gwen, Spider Woman, and Octavia Otto, who is probably the only actual heroic Otto Octavius, or truly heroic Otto Octavius version. Meanwhile, Otto Octavius, or the Superior Octopus as he's now known, is fighting some immortal guy who basically wants to set up business in San Francisco. He's part of some mafia. He's immortal, apparently, as well. Fight breaks out and the Inheritors are back. Guess what? Guess how they got back. That's right. They got back because Otto was a dumbass. Also, Captain Britain, Spider-Man, Spider-Man UK, he go bye-bye.
Which is BS.
So,
bloody anti-Britishism is what it is.
Yeah, I know. See, the thing that I actually kind of like Spider-Geddon, but not because of Spider-Geddon itself. What I like is the Vault of Spiders, because it introduces you to so many different Spider-Men, and some of them are amazing. I mean, some of the Spider-Men that they have in this, the Web-Slinger, for example, who's the Old West version of Spider-Man, is just really funny, and the art style changes to reflect each different spider person's era and abilities. For example, when he goes to the Japanese Spider-Man, it's basically a manga within a comic book. It's amazing. That's the final galaxy battle. it quite literally
so
is.
That's why that story has a ridiculous over-the-top anime sounding title.
Yes.
I actually quite like that now.
It's superb. Just in the middle of it, it just cuts away to Japanese Spider-Man in his giant spider robot fighting some guy, and it's just like everyone is just shouting and pausing, and it's amazing. And then you got Spider-Bite, which is in a virtual world, and then you got the Savage Spider, who's basically Tarzan but done with spiders.
That sounds good. But Rob,
yeah,
tell me about Spiders, man.
I'm getting to Spiders, man, because Superior Spider-Man and Spider-Man PS4 are gathering the troops, and they both split off. Miles is leading one team who doesn't want to kill the Inheritors, whereas Otto is leading another team who do want to kill the Inheritors. Because Otto's solution is a permanent solution to the problem, and Otto is thinking, as a scientist would, how can I solve this and make sure it never comes back? Very simple. And that's why Otto is also a dumbass. Because he doesn't think of any other ways, he just thinks this is the most efficient and easiest way to solve this problem. Doesn't try and think of any other ways. So automatically there's a split in the team. They don't have Peter, who led them in the fight against the Inheritors last time. He's not there this time. So you end up with like Spider-Man India from Mumbai, Earth 50101.
I think his name is like Peter Pavitar or something, isn't it?
Pavitar Prabhakar, and you've got Spider-Man and Spinneret, who are Peter Parker and Mary Jane Watson Parker, Spider-Ben and Petey. You've got Spider or Penny Parker and Silk, Cindy Moon, and you also have Spider-Man, who is...
Spider-Man!
Yeah, Spider-Man is brilliant. Spider-Man, his speech is just, you know, the way he talks is awesome. Spider-Man is actually thousands of spiders who think that they're Peter Parker.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's like possibly the only real bit I know from Spider-Geddon, and I love it.
Yeah, it is superb, because on board Leopardon, who is Japanese Spider-Man's giant robot, Superior Spider-Man is giving a speech to the troops, and we will do what the cowards lacked the will to do in our last battle with the Inheritors, destroy our enemies once and for all. And Spider-Man just holds his hands up and says, and eat them. We can eat them, right? I'm asking for a friend.
Oh, Spider-Man, you're horrifying.
But so good.
God, could you just imagine, like, punching Spider-Man?
Exactly.
And just, like, you tear through the suit and, a thousand spiders crawl out.
Yeah, also... Oh. Ooh. Yeah. Also, Ben Reilly makes an appearance as Scarlet Spider, and then they have to call in the troops because they're not enough to take everybody on, and the troops are, well, the troops are because it goes to the back to the Vault of Spiders, and you get Spider-Man's origin. Sorry, then you get the Spectacular Spider-Mom, who is Aunt May, but the old elderly Aunt May.
I hope she's. This story, Spider-Gwen.
Thing is, it's such a funny story because she ends up having to fight the Vulture, who's also an old man. And so you got this bizarre situation of a...
Do they just end up in a supermarket shouting at each other over the aisles?
No, but that would have been amazing if they'd gone down that route.
Zimmer fame chase scene.
It would be amazing. And then you've got... Gwen Stacy's dad, who is also a spider.
What?
Yeah, Gwen Stacy's dad is also a spider.
I mean, I guess if there's like an infinite number of Spider-Men, one of them's got to be, right?
Yeah. Spider-Woman, who's Jessica Drew of Earth 616, she's also involved in this as well. And
I'm just listing every single Spider-Man at this point.
It's bizarre, because Norman Osborn, who is some weird spider thing, he's... teamed up with Spider-Man, who is a fairly simple fellow. Norman is going somewhere with Spider-Man, and they're going into Loom World to do stuff. The troops are called in, which involves Captain Universe Spider-Man, who is supposed to be dead. Weird. But it just keeps going like that, and they just pile it on. It's then just becomes a case of how many Spider-Men can we fit into one comic? You know the clown car? You know the whole clown car? How many clowns can you fit in a car?
Yep.
It's a bit like that towards the end. Because you end up with Spiderling, Spider-Girl, Spider-Woman, Spider-Mom, Web-Slinger. All of them are just involved. It's crazy. Just the number of Spider-People. But I kind of love it because of that.
Yeah, I mean, this sounds like something I would be into.
Yeah. I think you would. And it perfectly highlights the whole alternate reality aspect of it. And I know for a fact that once Marvel reboot the universe, this is just going to be an alternate continuity event.
What if Marvel reboot their continuity, but now everyone is just a Spider-Man?
Captain Spider-America.
Yeah.
Oh, Captain Spider-Marvel?
The Spider-X-Men.
Yeah.
Colossus Spider-Man.
Spider-Colossus he'd be, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Spider-Thor? Spider-Hulk?
All the villains should be as well.
Yeah.
I did say everyone is a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, it maybe does get a bit weird when Peter Parker has to decide between going off to face his arch-nemesis, Peter Parker the Green Goblin, or going on that hot date with Peter Parker Watson.
Anyway, I'm done with Spider-Geddon. Who's next?
I think that's me. So I have been reading Black Hammer.
Ooh.
Specifically, Black Hammer Volume 2 and Black Hammer Age of Doom Part 1, which are technically Volumes 2 and 3 of just the whole Black Hammer story. So yeah, this continues the story from the first collection. It's a group of superheroes who are absolutely just famous DC and Marvel superheroes, but with the serial numbers filed off. They went to fight a dark being called the Anti-God, defeated him, but were then engulfed in a giant flash of white, and woke up to find themselves stuck on a farm, seemingly in Midwest America, where they've been trapped for the last 10 years.
Yep.
Okay.
And at the end of the first volume, they had a surprise visitor, Lucy Webber, a.k.a. the daughter of the titular Black Hammer, who died trying to escape the farm. And now she's here to figure out just what the beans is going on. And which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
By the end of Volume 3, she's figured out what the beans is going on.
Okay, though, that's good storytelling if they've done it in like in that short a space of time.
Yeah, I like that they've actually just gone for, no, we're going to put all our cards, we're not going to stretch this mystery out too long. We're not lost. Yeah, you take that show that's been off air for several years at this point.
Well, not only that, they're not going to do what the other comic book companies do, where they'll have like one issue of that story a month or like every 2 months, but the rest of the time they'll do like all these little side stories in other issues. Marvel is particularly guilty
of
that.
Well, surprising you say that, because a lot of this is about doing kind of weird little side stories, because it's sort of interwoven with looking at sort of the history of each character's.
Yeah, but that's all part of the same story, isn't it?
Yeah, they say it doesn't just like stop its narrative to go do something else.
Yeah, whereas
everything like has a purpose.
Whereas what I'm saying is, you don't have to go outside of the Black Hammer comics to get all that information. It's all part of that series, the Black Hammer series. So you don't have. It's not like the Marvel stuff, like Civil War 2, where if you wanted to read something, some important information that dealt with Captain Marvel, you had to go and read Captain Marvel.
I mean, really, you don't even need to read the kind of Black Hammer spin-off series. I know they've done a couple, like a Dr. Star and Sherlock Frankenstein.
Thing is,
but they're just like fun little side pieces.
Well, Dr. Star wasn't fun.
No, Dr. Star wasn't. I was going to say Dr. Fun isn't Star. It's not my fault, I can't think straight, it hurts too much.
It does. That was heartbreaking, that one.
Yeah, well, and like, to be fair, Black Hammer itself is also pretty sad.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really like Abraham Slam, who is basically kind of the pulp action hero Captain America type dude. And just like, you get some of his backstories. And basically a lot of it's about how he's kind of had to watch as the world's passed him by a bit. I like there's this really funny and sad issue where I love the cover because it's just him dressed like some weird battle armor stuff with Abraham Slam gets extreme. And it's basically, it's the idea of him trying to become like this 90s hero and just like shoving a load of like giant shoulder pads and pouches all over his costume. And just the idea, he goes to fight a monster and it immediately all starts falling off. And that's a fun gag. But it's also, it's to face up to the fact that he's just an old man who punches things good. And the entire world is like bigger and scarier than he could ever comprehend. That's good. And there's a fun bit because this is a spoiler, because I'm going to have to spoil a little bit of it.
Okay.
Because I mean, basically everything that happens in the main plot is a big spoiler. So at the end of Volume 2, Lucy Webber picks up her father's hammer and becomes the new Black Hammer, and then immediately vanishes. And she basically gets pulled into what is very clearly the Vertigo universe. So, like, she meets a British mage who's a bit of a scumbag.
Okay.
Goes to hell, meets what might be one of my favourite character names ever, who is a Black Hammer's dead man substitute, Jack Sabbath.
That's an amazing name.
Yeah. And then they go meet a guy, I think his name is like the Story Man or something, and it's just so plainly obvious that he is Sandman, and that's a fun little diversion. And yeah, and then like I say, at the end of the third book you find out what's going on, and I like that it's one of those things where it's not what you expect. I like there's even bits where they go through and they like have characters flat out state the kind of theories you would expect the twist to be. Like, I think Barb Alien at one point says, oh, I just assumed we were all dead and this was some kind of purgatory. But it turns out it's not. It's like, it's something you'd never expect. But once it's revealed, you can kind of go back and see a lot of things and go, oh, actually, this all makes sense and everything ties together.
Okay.
And it is real good. So yeah, that is Black Hammer by Jeff Lemire and Dean Ormston with some guest artists, Dave Stewart in the second book, and I think David Rubin as well. I think Todd Klein, yeah, Todd Klein is just the letters. He's across both. And yet Dave Stewart helps out on the art for volume 3 as well. Because some of the flashback issues, they kind of change up the art a bit to evoke a certain style.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a blooming good read.
Awesome.
Which is one of the, to be honest, it's one of those things where I feel a bit silly saying it, because it's in, hey, you know that thing that's widely considered one of the greatest comics of like the past few years? Yeah, yeah. It turns out it's pretty good.
Yeah, I can see why you'd feel a bit of a fool saying that.
Another news, water is wet.
Basically. Anyway, Mick.
Yeah. Well, it's me, is it?
That's a sad sound of resignation.
Right. So, you know about 22-ish years ago, there was that series in America about kids in a high school that dealt with the occult based on a movie. Was it Bunty the Werewolf Killer or something?
I thought you were going to say Beverly Hills 90210.
Too soon.
Yeah, you remember that one where they had to get over who slept with who to stop the great old ones from opening the spinal seal to unleash the dark gods. That was my favourite 90210 episode.
So anyway, yeah, obviously we live in a post-Buffy era now. And so it's almost impossible to do any kind of sort of teen supernatural thing without a comparison.
Yeah.
And this, that is very true.
So the comic I'm doing is Evan Dawkins' Blackwood with art by Veronica and Andy Fish. And it's almost like what would happen, because obviously with Buffy, you were in a normal school, but supernatural weird stuff was happening. This is kind of, what would happen if Buffy happened somewhere like Hogwarts and the actual school was a sorcery school and they had been specifically targeted to become students at this, well, it's actually a college rather than a school. And the answer is, because on first glance, that premise kind of excites me, you know?
Yeah.
This is a school for sorcery, misfits, because of certain aspects of their personality, certain skills and abilities that they have meant that they've been chosen to come to this place where there is something odd afoot. Had me hooked from the description. And then I got about 3 pages in and realised this is basically Buffy Light.
Okay.
And then when I looked at the credits, I realised why.
And it's why because, is that?
It's because this is by the author of Call of Cthulhu, isn't it?
What, Evan Dawkins?
Yes. A favourite of our podcasts, Call of Cthulhu, I think you'll find.
I wouldn't say that, but as I've said before, I find it difficult to marry the fact that Evan Dawkins wrote Call of Cthulhu along with the fact that Evan Dawkins' name is the lead name on Beasts of Burden.
Well, I think based on what I've read here, I think you'll find that he was involved in Beasts of Burden on his one good day. Because, you know, this is adequate, but it's not. There's no substance to it. There's a slight plot twist that I wasn't expecting, but actually bearing in mind that it's a kind of teen supernatural thing, yet you kind of are. There's one interesting character in it, but she's only interesting in the same way that all the angry misfit kids with weird hair and makeup are in these kind of things. They're all sort of stereotypical attitude kids that turn up at this thing. And it's just a bit, meh. The best artwork comes in the chapter breaks.
Yeah.
There is one character in this that I would love to see in a spin-off comic, but done by someone else. And that's a two-headed mummified chimp called Chimpotep.
See, I'm tempted to say this series gets a pass just for that.
Yeah. If it was all about the chimp, I'd love it. Unfortunately, the chimp is just a MacGuffin.
But I think the problem is Evan Dorkin used up all his good writing on Chimpote.
Yeah. Also, Andrew, why is this reminding me a little bit of the Umbrella Academy?
Because
it's angsty emo kids and a cool monkey that are basically the same.
Exactly.
I mean, this isn't an erudite, well-mannered monkey. This is a vicious, thieving chimp. But yeah, it's like, you know, the only character that... Because in these days of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the DCEU and stuff like that, you start... I don't know about you guys, but you automatically start thinking in terms of how would they cast this if it was going to become a live action thing? Because these days with comic books, that's a lot more inevitable than it used to be.
Yeah.
And when I'm looking at the lead character in this, I'm thinking Cara Delevingne. That is not a good sign.
Yeah, no, this is true.
No.
If you actually envisage the character being played by Cara Delevingne, you're signing the comic's death warrant, I think.
Yeah, it's just that kind of, I'm so cool because I don't care.
Yeah. And there's several kids turn up at this school, and only about three of them, no, actually only about two of them get given a backstory. There's no real detail to what the others' abilities are. There's no real sort of indication of what the curriculum at this school is, and it's, you know, it's spread over four issues, and there's just no real substance to it. It's the kind of thing, if I hadn't read the trade and I'd been reading it issue by issue, it might have remained an issue one in my collection.
Okay.
With no follow-up.
That's fair enough.
It is colourful, and the best artwork comes in the chapter breaks, and that's about the most positive thing I can say about it.
Okay, God, there's some good art, because I do like Veronica Fish. She's a bit of art on the Spider-Woman series.
Yeah, the actual sort of main artwork in the actual issues is more akin to the sort of Archie-style art that you get in Call of Cthulhu. But the chapter break art, clearly unconstrained by the need to portray a weak and insipid plot, she's really gone to town.
Excellent. So I said Spider-Women instead of Spider-Woman because Rob's got me all spidered out.
Yes. I will tell you that there are no spider men, women, or children, or animals in this comic. So that kind of cancels out Chimpotep.
Yep, it does. Oh, is it me again?
Yeah, I think we've cycled back around.
Right, I've got X-Men by Matthew Rosenberg, Greg Land, Jay Leeston, Frank DeMarta. And this is called Until Our Hearts Stop. Now, this is actually collecting Astonishing X-Men 2017, numbers 13 to 17, and Astonishing X-Men Annual 2018, number 1. And I kind of have to agree with Mick on something. When you're jumping into what is effectively the middle of a story, it's a bit difficult to follow what's happened before. Now, thankfully, I kind of do know what happened before, because this is a little bit after the X-Men versus Inhumans, if I remember rightly. And
At least this is basically like picking that plot thread up.
Yeah, and this is actually a story all about Havoc. Good old Alex Summers, who...
Yay, he's sure one of the X-Men.
Yeah, good old Alex Summers, who originally was part of X-Factor, was it?
Actually, no, he was part of the X-Men, then he was part of X-Factor.
Yeah, he was part of the X-Men, then he was part of X-Factor, which is a Canadian X-Men-type team. Which has...
They're the ones who work for the government.
I thought they were Canadian.
Nope, that's Alpha Flight.
Ah, damn it. I keep getting confused. Yeah, X-Factor works for the government. They have a...
I mean, there's literally 9,000 X-Men teams, Rob. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, I keep getting confused. But anyway, Alex, until recently, from the blurb in the front, because they did put some helpful blurb in to bring you up to speed, Alex Summers, the man called Havoc, a fitting name for someone with the ability to emit powerful plasma blasts and whose life hasn't always been the picture of absolute control, especially since Alex had his moral compass forcibly inverted, compelling him to do evil rather than good. But all of that is over now. Havok is ready to be an X-Men again.
I mean, I think we've all been there.
Well, we have and we haven't. See, this starts off with...
Wait, are you saying you've never become a supervillain because the Scarlet Witch tried to cast a spell on the Red Skull, who was at the time in possession of Charles Xavier's brain, and that backfired and made a bunch of characters' moral alignments change over for no reason whatsoever, and then most of them changed back, but yours didn't for no reason at all, and then half your face melted?
See, I think if you're saying that's never happened to you, Rob, you might be telling Porky.
Yeah. But anyway, this starts off with a big single-page image of Havok using his plasma blasts on some giant monster-type creature. And he knocks the monster out, it lands onto a building, and then the Avengers turn up. He says, "You're welcome, I just took down the monster for you." And then finds out that he basically jumped the gun, because what is actually happening is Tony and the rest of the Avengers, Tony Stark that is, had made a deal with the Mole Man to transport one of his monsters that had grown too large to another area. And now that Havok has just basically knocked that monster out, they've broken the deal. Way to go, Alex. Start as you mean to go along. And that's basically what happens in this issue. Alex stumbles from one disaster to another. Miss Sinister is somehow involved in this. I don't know when they gender swapped Mr. Sinister. But that's just a weird thing that I thought, okay, it's X-Men, I'm just going to deal with it and move on.
I don't know if Miss Sinister even is like a gender-swapped version of Mr. Sinister.
May as well be.
I think she might even be like a completely different character.
She might be a different character, but she looks a lot like Mr. Sinister. That's why I said...
Yeah, like she's definitely based on his look.
Yeah. So, anyway, Alex has been told that he can't be part of the X-Men and he needs to take five, needs to find out what he wants to do. On the other hand...
No one wants Alex on
their
team.
No one wants Alex on their team. And Kitty Pryde, has basically told him that she now owns the name X-Men and he can't use it for any super team that he puts together. So Alex starts recruiting people and he starts off with Beast, who is teaching at Harvard. And then they get attacked by a bunch of Reavers who are part man, part robot, bounty hunter, privateer type characters, aren't they?
Yeah, I do like the Reavers. They have like weird look. One of them just has like a tank track for his bottom half.
Yeah. But anyway, Hank unleashes Banshee, who he's been keeping in kind of a weird stasis thing. Warbird also joins in the fun because Warbird is Warbird. And then they find Colossus, who's living like a... Colossus is living like a king in this issue. Do you know that? He's living at large, man. Sitting at home in his apartment, drunk, while there's trash piling up all around him because, basically, Kitty dumped him at the altar, didn't she?
Yeah, she did.
Pardon the phrasing, but way to go with the dick moves.
Mm?
They've been teasing Kitty Pryde and Colossus as a couple, and eventually is a married couple for ages.
Right? Yeah, but no one actually wants them to get married.
No one actually wants them to get married, but I just thought, okay, why don't you just go for it? But instead they went, no, we're going to do Rogue and Gambit, who really should have been married a long time ago.
See, the thing is, actually, that was possibly the one issue of that X-Men run that I actually really liked.
Which one?
Like that wedding.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, they spent ages setting up, oh, yeah, it's going to be Colossus and Shadowcat. They're getting married. Psych! No, it's not.
Hmm. So, anyway, number four, technically, I suppose, since Warbird is hanging around Alex because Kitty Pryde told him to keep an eye on Alex.
Actually, I think he's Warpath, isn't he?
Warpath, Warbird, I don't care. He's basically got big knives and flies.
But why has he got big flies?
Big knives and flies. I don't know
why. Can he fly?
Yeah, he can, apparently. I didn't know this until... Well, we'll get to that in a bit. But
this is the big Native American dude, isn't it?
Yes. See, next up, you meet Dazzler, who's basically a singer now. But here's the thing. You think...
I mean, she always was. That was kind of a thing.
Yeah. But you think that Alex is there to recruit Dazzler, But no, he wants to recruit Forge, who is the head of Dazzler's stage crew and fixing all sorts of stuff. They get jumped by the security forces and start fighting them.
I'm going to have to stop you. That's just a completely unrealistic plot point. I'm sorry. No one chooses to have Forge on their team.
Yeah.
He just sort of shows up and won't go away.
That's the thing. I think Forge has a secret crush on Dazzler, which is why he's hanging around being her roadie.
Oh, definitely, because he is the worst.
Yep, he is. He's such a stalker, isn't he?
He is.
So anyway...
What a creepy weirdo he is.
He is. He is, so totally. But anyway, Dazzler turns up in an outfit that looks a lot like Captain Marvel's and starts beating up the security forces as well. And I'm just kind of, okay, why is she dressed like Captain Marvel? What's with the star-shaped symbol on her chest?
To be fair, she did have a star-shaped symbol before. If anything, Captain Marvel's ripping her off.
What, the current Captain Marvel or the original Captain Marvel?
I mean, I guess if she's ripping off original Captain Marvel and then Carol's ripping off Dazzler.
Wouldn't it be more likely, though, that Carol Danvers would be inspired by Marvel rather than Dazzler?
Possibly. Sentinels
involved... Does that mean that Dazzler has to change her name now to Shadaz?
That's amazing. Anyway, the story continues. Sentinels are involved. Alex learns a lesson. What that lesson is, I'm not sure. But then it goes on to a story from the Astonishing X-Men annual in which Jean and Bobby and Warren and Hank are having dinner. And they're having dinner in the place where Charles took them after their first successful mission. But there's a seat empty, which is obviously Scott's seat. And then Charles turns up. But he's supposed to be dead. Somehow he got better. It's comic books,
oh,
just deal with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's a weird way to do it. Because basically, like, issues 1 to 12 of Astonishing X-Men were kind of like a completely different series.
Yeah.
And that was where Charles Xavier came back. So, like, the annual is basically for that instead of these issues.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. And it still doesn't make sense what Charles was trying to teach them.
I think he was teaching the important lesson that, much like Forge, he is the worst.
Yeah, he is.
I'll just go as far as to say that Professor X is a jerk.
Well, he basically introduces Beast to this thing called Lucifer. And Hank really wants Lucifer, which kind of leads up to all that stuff that happened in the future, doesn't it?
It's okay, that future didn't happen now. And also, that's the other Hank McCoy.
Yes. Yeah.
Now do you see why I'm down on Marvel?
Wait.
Yeah?
This one is the real McCoy.
Oh, no. Andrew, can you fire me?
And on that note, I'm going to hand it over to Andrew. I've got nothing more to say.
It's Marvel's fault.
I can't add any more to this. Make,
they're going to introduce multiple versions of Hank McCoy. I got to do it.
But only one of them will be real.
Anyway, I've been reading Kino's Journey, Volume 1, The Beautiful World.
Ooh.
By Iruka Shiomea, based on the original story by Keiichi Sigisawa, with original character design by Kohaku Kuraboshi. Don't worry, we're going to edit in the better names at some point.
Yeah, but don't worry about that. I mean, Kino's Journey is something that I'm very familiar with, so I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about this.
Okay, so Kino's Journey is about a girl who has taken the name Kino and her talking motorbike, Hermes, or Motorrad, as it's called in the series.
Yeah.
And they travel around. It's kind of a world. It's kind of deliberately left vague what this world's deal is.
Yeah.
But basically, there's lots of different countries where she encounters kind of different types of stories. So one of the big ones that I think kind of exemplifies what the series is about is she goes to a place called the Land of Understanding Each Other's Pain, where basically she arrives at this kind of seemingly abandoned city where everything's just run by robots. And eventually she manages to find one person living sort of out away. Well, like everyone, in a secluded home miles away from anyone else. And she discovers that basically everyone in this country drank an elixir that gave them kind of shared telepathy. So you could understand what everyone else is thinking. And, you know, that way that there'd be no more problems, because if you hurt someone, you'd just be able to tell, oh no, I've accidentally hurt your feelings, I'm sorry. Turns out that went horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Because everyone you're around can hear every single thought you have about them. So if you were to walk past thinking, oh no, my girlfriend, she's overwatering the plants again. Yeah, she can hear that. She's going to get mad. And just eventually, it led to the point where someone died in a car crash and everyone around them could feel their dying moments driving them insane. And so that's why everyone just lives in complete seclusion now. And it's just her kind of driving about, having these weird kind of semi-philosophical adventures. Like, I really like one of the other ones, Three Men Along the Tracks.
Hmm.
Where basically she's riding along kind of these old overgrown train tracks, only to come across like an old man who spent the past 50 years traveling along the tracks, kind of polishing them up, making them nice and usable. Then she rides a bit further, finds another man who's been traveling along the tracks behind the first man for the past 50 years, digging up all the tracks because they're no longer in use. And then she travels a bit further down the line, meets another man who's been traveling down the tracks for the past 50 years, whose job it is to lay down some new tracks. And, you know, his job is great and easy because look at all these perfectly repaired parts that are just lying by the side of the train tracks that you can put down. And yeah, it's quite delightful.
I thought you'd like it. I honestly figured you'd like it. Because it was adapted as an anime years ago. It was one of those, I think it was late 90s, early noughties, it was adapted. And
yes, I believe, because it started as a light novel series, didn't it?
Yeah. And it was adapted as an anime. It was one of those ones that caught a lot of people off guard when it came out. Because when it came out, people didn't really know what to make of it. But this was in a time when people had only just become aware of things like Naruto and Bleach and stuff like that. So the anime community was still, it wasn't as jaded as it is right now. And it wasn't as defensive as it is now. It was still very much in its exploratory phase. People were still willing to try different types of shows, and they were still willing to make loads of different types of shows. Around the same time as Kino's Journey, you had all sorts of other really interesting, really innovative shows like Serial Experiments Lane and stuff like that. Wolf's Rain was around the same time, if I remember rightly, where the lead characters is basically a pack of wolves.
Sure, what?
Andrew, did you say at the beginning of your review that this was about a character with a talking motorbike?
Yes.
Yes.
Sign me up.
I mean, it's not Knight Rider, Mick. I should point that out.
No, because Knight Rider was a talking car.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're expecting it to be kind of sliding through the city streets, taking down drug dealers, you might be a little bit disappointed.
Ah, but you see, what you've confused me with is someone who actually used to watch Knight Rider religiously. Because even though it was of my era, not that keen.
Hmm.
All right, so it is purely just the concept of a motorbike what can talk.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Thing is, Hermes.
Okay, yeah, you're gonna like this.
Yeah, Hermes is quite a character in himself, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas like Kit really wasn't.
Hermes is a lot smarter than Kit, I'd say.
Yeah, and he's just a nice, friendly traveling companion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who gets a bit annoyed when you forget to put his stand down?
Because I figured that will be the case in a sort of manga rather than a Western TV show.
Also, can I just say my absolute favourite bit? Is that when she arrives in the land of understanding each other's pain and she gets a hotel room, she brings Hermes into the room with her.
Yeah, that's the thing. Hermes goes wherever she goes.
Excellent. Yeah, I'll have a go at that.
I think you'll enjoy it, Mick. I honestly think Kino's Journey, if I was going to introduce people to anime, people who weren't familiar with anime, and I was going to recommend certain shows for them to watch, just so they'd have an idea of just how broad the scope of the medium is. Kino's yeah. Journey is one of those shows that I would suggest.
Yeah, it's just one of those. See, I don't want to say slow, because it's still got a good pace to it, but like...
It's what's defined in anime as kind of slice of life, but Kino's Journey is a bit of a different take on the whole slice of life idea.
Yeah, just these kind of chill, slightly meditative adventures.
Yeah.
Reminds me a lot of, as well as Mushishi.
Yeah, it is a bit like Mushishi, yeah.
Just that sort of kind of traveling from place to place, there's problems, but a lot of the time the problem's just... people sorting their nonsense out.
Yeah. What I like about Kino's Journey, though, is that it wears its hat on its sleeve. It doesn't make any... doesn't try and confuse you as to what it is. They called it The Beautiful World because that's what they want you to see.
Yeah, it's about... it's basically just about, like, the joy of travelling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I think the only things I would say is that this film does feel a bit short.
Yes.
Like, I mean, that's just a... I'd like to have a bigger chunk of it.
I could not agree more. They actually did a new series of Kino's Journey, by the way.
Oh, nice.
They did a new series, because the original series was in 2003, if I remember rightly. And they did a new series, I think it was last year. It was 2017, they did a new series.
Oh, well, I might have to take a cheeky look for that at some point.
Yep. And each series is only like 12 episodes, 12, 13 episodes, so they're easily manageable.
Yeah, it's like a tasty little bite-sized treat.
Yep, absolutely.
So, anyway, on that foodie note, I think we've probably come to the end of the show.
Yes, we have. So if you want to catch up with any of our other episodes, you'll find them all on Audioboom or Apple Podcasts or whichever podcast provider that you're using. And if you are using anything like that, then leave us a rating, leave us a review. It does help us with exposure. It does help us improve what we're doing. Maybe Andrew can even get the introduction correct one time.
I'm not promising anything.
We'll give you some extra practice when we're on Eclectica.
No, because that'll just confuse him even more. Because on Eclectica, he's got to introduce himself.
Yeah, but... he might get the four-panel intro right on Eclectica, and then we can edit across.
See, that's cunningly...
Yeah, I mean, that's it, really. I just need to get it once, and then we can just copy and paste it into our show.
Yes. If you head over to our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, you'll find all sorts of other stuff that we do as well, including our Patreon and our shop. That's it from us. We'll be back next week with more comic book and manga goodness. Until then, I've been Rob.
And some Captain Marvel thingamajiggles.
Oh, yes, we got Captain Marvel thingamajiggles next week. And I have some Captain Marvel for next week as well.
Hooray!
And I'll have some Captain Marvel as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got some Captain Marvel as well, Andrew?
I've got a comic that I think she appears in.
Given my recent gripes about Marvel, that could be literally any comic.
Yeah.
Including a couple of DC titles.
Can you imagine if it was Superman featuring Captain Marvel? Anyway, until next week, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
And I've been Mick.
We'll see you all later.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye now.